This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It's Words and Pictures. Editorial cartoonist Jack Oman spent nearly 3 decades at the Oregonian. We'll hear his talk at the Oregon Historical Society about art, politics, and the allure of the Pacific Northwest. But first, in just about a minute, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. Stay tuned. That's next on KBOO.
Peace, this is Mike Crenshaw. I want to invite you to come out to see Long Distance Revolutionary, a documentary about Mumia Abu-Jamal. This film chronicles his life as a revolutionary, a writer, a journalist, a philosopher, and an inspiration to people worldwide. It's showing June 14th at the Clinton Street Theater. That's a Friday night.
At 7 p.m.
That starts the week-long run of Long Distance Revolutionary in Portland. KBOO is proud to bring you this event, and I hope to see you there.
Guantanamo Bay prison camp, inching towards closure. With 104 men on hunger strike, 41 of them being force-fed and 4 in the hospital, White House officials and leading senators paid a surprise visit to the camp last Friday. Obama once again says he wants to close the camp. At the same time, there's a mini troop surge going on there at the prison. Join me, Linda Olsen-Osterlin, for a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest will be Andy Worthington, UK journalist and author of The Guantanamo Files. He'll help make sense of the changing political landscape around the prison camp and bring us up to date on efforts to have the men released and the prison closed. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO Community Radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Also, thanks to a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I, of course, want to talk about the NSA. And I want to talk about Snowden. Snowden spilled his guts. That was in Catch-22. And indeed, this has happened. But the first thing I want to talk about is involuntary servitude. If you look at the Wikipedia entry, involuntary servitude is a United States legal and constitutional term for a person laboring against that person's will to benefit another under some form of coercion, other than the worker's financial needs. See, because this is the United States, and we don't talk down capitalism around here. Other than the worker's financial needs, they write, true enough for the United States, and they write, while laboring to benefit another occurs also in the condition of slavery, involuntary servitude does not necessarily connote the complete lack of freedom experienced in chattel slavery. Involuntary servitude may also refer to other forms of unfree labor. Involuntary servitude is not dependent on compensation or its amount. The 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution makes involuntary servitude illegal. under any U.S. jurisdiction, whether at the hands of the U.S. government or in the private sphere, except as punishment for a crime. Here's the quote, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction, end quote. Now, consider the position in which a person owing a commercial debt in 2013, or student loan particularly, finds him or herself the loan. The student loan cannot be forgiven. Chapter 7, which forgives debts, is not available. Chapter 13 is expensive and sometimes untenable. And a host of bottom feeder collection agencies and their attorneys are ready to garnish the wages of that person who cannot pay. Should the person find the burden onerous, for example, due to the fact that there are not enough jobs to go around, did anyone notice? And that wages have fallen as a result of the general desperation and the general capitalism, of course. There is no escape, and indeed there is the prospect of imprisonment, coercion, in the case of conviction of condemned of court in civil proceedings. Yep, answer those court summons. Just answer them. And, but, you know, people have been going down to prison for debt, increasingly. So, let me quote that again. Involuntary servitude is a term for a person laboring against that person's will to benefit another under some form of coercion other than the worker's financial needs. Well, I should think that imprisonment is a form of coercion. Now, please consider these statistics. Nearly 20 million Americans attend college each year. No surprise, right? This is from ASA.org. Of that 20 million, close to 12 million, or 60%, borrow annually to help cover costs. Why is that? Well, because the colleges cost so damned much. And because we don't honor the right to education in this country. Now, in civilized countries, most of them in Europe, they'll pay you to go to school if you qualify. They'll look after you. They'll make sure you go to school. Is that a shock? Returning to the statistics, there are approximately 37 million student loan borrowers in the United States with outstanding student loans today. 37 million. As of the first quarter of 2012, the under 30 age group has the most borrowers at 14 million, followed by 10.6 million for the 30 to 39 group, 5.7 million in the 40 to 49 category, and it goes on down. And there are roughly somewhere between $902 billion and $1 trillion in total outstanding student loan debt in the United States today, and boy, is it tasty. Oh yeah, you got to get some of that debt because they have to pay you. They have to pay, and you can jack up the interest, and you can add penalties, and you can roll all that together, and you can put interest on that compounded, and you can keep compounding, you can compound on the compounding, and you can make people pay. By the time I finally paid off my student debt, I paid $13,000 for $2,000 worth of debt. I got off easy. Easy. Returning to the statistics, roughly $864 billion is outstanding federal loan debt, while the remaining $150 billion is in private student loans. Private student loans are not made or backed by the federal government. As of quarter one in 2012, the average student loan balance for all age groups is $24,000. About one quarter of borrowers owe more than $28,000. 10% of borrowers owe more than $54,000. 3% owe more than $100,000 to go to school. Among all bachelor's degree recipients, median debt was around $7,960 at public four-year institutions, $17,000 at private not-for-profit four-year institutions, and $31,000 at for-profit institutions. Boy, are they profiting. Profiting professors. And as of 2012, October, the average amount of student loan debt for the class of 2011 was $26,000. It is time to cancel the student loan debt. Cancel it. Cancel the debt. And to restore Chapter 7 bankruptcy protection for all of our people. This will have the twin effects Boosting income for working people and destroying the billionaire class, which even now worldwide subverts all parliaments while hiding tens of trillions of dollars in offshore tax-dodging havens. We can't afford billionaires. Sorry. If you got more than $10 million, I would say in the society I would like to move towards, that society would say, okay, well, $10 million is enough. Good for you. Thank you very much. You want to earn more than that? Well, go ahead. We'll give you a little plaque. Changing topics. Let's talk about climate. Last July, a record melting occurred on the Greenland ice sheet. Even in some of the highest and coldest areas, field parties observed a rainfall with air temperatures several degrees above the freezing point. A month before, it was though Greenland expert Jason Box had a crystal ball. He predicted this complete surface melting. In a scientific publication, Box research then got broader public visibility after climate activist and writer Bill McKibben covered it in Rolling Stone magazine. This is from The Guardian. Guardian's gotten more interesting these days. I read it a lot, actually. I don't read it. If I want to find out what's happening between the British and the Irish, I don't read it. But a lot of other things. You can get some actual journalism. But returning to the Guardian article, a basic premise of Bach's study was that observations reveal a progressive darkening of Greenland ice. Darkening causes the white snow surface to absorb more sunlight, which in turn increases melting. Given that this process is likely to continue, the impact on Greenland melt, and the subsequent sea level rise will be profound. There are several mechanisms that are known to darken Arctic ice, including desert dust, pollen, soot from natural forest fires, and human biomass burning for land clearing and domestic use. Industrial shipping and aircraft pollution also play a role. Some of these effects are increasing. As climate change accelerates, more areas are being burned by wildfire each year. Box wondered how much increasing wildfires with resulting soot landing on the northern ice might amplify what scientists call a positive feedback, a self-reinforcing cycle, increasing Greenland melting. The cycle starts with initial warming, leads to more fires, more soot, and in turn, more warming and more melt. The feedback is important, particularly in polar regions where observed warming is twice the rate of more southerly locations around the globe. Box calculates this effect has doubled Greenland surface melting since the year 2000. In departing from this article, that ice is miles thick, and a lot of people, when they heard that Greenland had melted, thought that it had all melted away. No, no, no. It would take a lot more than that, but that ice is mounted on land and is not in the sea, and it goes into the sea, it will raise the sea level. But returning to the article, the topic has become hot among ice experts as new observations of ice melt continue to outstrip projections from just a few years ago. Arctic sea ice, another key measure of global heating, is now 60 years ahead of worst-case projections from the last report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in 2007. Let me just repeat that. Arctic sea ice, another key measure of global heating, is now 60 years ahead of worst-case projections from the last report in 2007. Arctic snow cover on land has also been declining more rapidly than projected, even faster than sea ice, while mass loss of the enormous Greenland ice sheet is difficult to measure. Satellite data indicate it has doubled in the last decade. If this acceleration continues, sea level rise could be even higher this century than the 1 or 2 meters that mainstream scientists now project, possibly much higher. Despite a recent study that projected Greenland outflow glaciers to slow, surface melting has increased faster than ice flow. The albedo feedback, whether it's dark or not, feedback is a critical piece of physics that enables surface melting to continue dominating the loss. And check that out at guardian.co.uk. Now I want to talk about the NSA, which will not surprise you if you listen to my program. By the way, if you want to listen to archives of this program, if you want to listen to today's program, then just a few minutes after the end of my broadcast, at the bottom of the hour, you can pull up kboo.fm. Hopefully you're already a member, but even if you're not, go ahead and pull it up. You'll find a search bar on the right. The search bar, put in Press Watch, all lowercase, all run together, Press Watch. And click that, and it will take you to the online audio, which you may enjoy at your leisure. NSA has been exposed to some extent as an organization that spies on the world and on Americans. And they're busy spinning the story and denying that they actually look at Americans, which I find ridiculous. Because for one thing, I've been doing this program, Press Watch, for many years. And I remember in the 90s, I started paying attention to something called Echelon, Dictionary in Echelon. From FAQs.org, Echelon is the name for a global surveillance network consisting of ground stations, satellites, and other listening posts, which collectively intercept and analyze worldwide electronic communications. The signals intelligence agencies of five nations, the NSA, the government communications headquarters of the UK, the Communications Security Establishment of Canada, the Defense Signals Directorate of Australia, and the Government Communications and Security Bureau of New Zealand all participate, with the NSA as a controlling agency. And departing from the text, it was in the 90s that New Zealand was the source of revelations about just how much spying was actually being done. Returning to the article, beginning in 1998, the governments of the European continent expressed increasing outrage over Echelon. However, their efforts to monitor their own citizens' communications suggest that this anger is not so much because Echelon exists at all, but because it is not under European control. Sound familiar? Yeah, in 1943, returning to the text, the United States and the UK signed the BRUSA, British-USA Agreement, which established a framework for the exchange of signals intelligence between the two nations. 3 years together, with the war over, the two signed the UK-USA Agreement of March 5, 1946, which brought together then signal intelligence efforts of British, American, Canadian, Australian, and New Zealand intelligence. Each UK-USA nation had its own geographic spheres of influence matched with listening posts in certain parts of the globe, but the most powerful of the five nations of the United States remained the unquestioned first among equals. First among equals. I was never okay with that phrase. Anyway, in later years, a number of other countries, including Denmark, Germany, Norway, and Turkey, signed third-party agreements of participation in the network. Talking about Echelon. Talking about the 90s. Over the years, there emerged a network of listening posts and satellites intercepting cables, telephone communications, radio and microwave signals, wireless communications, email, faxes, and other forms of communication traffic. Almost nothing was immune from the system that came to be known as Echelon. Whether a telegram sending birthday greetings to a child in Great Britain or walkie-talkie communications between East German guards and the Berlin Wall, UK-USA participants were forbidden by law from intercepting communications that originate and terminate in their own countries. But the exchange of information between intelligence services effectively rendered these prohibitions moot. Perhaps NSA, for instance, could not monitor communications within the United States, but GCHQ could with impunity, and it was a simple matter to pass this information on to NSA. The Echelon system seems to have emerged in something like its present form, though at a much less advanced technological stage, during the early 70s and the late 60s, as NSA and GCHQ geared up for the use of satellites on a grand scale, U.S. and British leadership began to recognize the need for interception and processing sites. The first ground station in what came to be known as Echelon was established in Cornwall, England, using two large dish antennae to intercept communications across the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. Soon the NSA built another such station at Yakima, Washington, to intercept communications. Other sites followed. The technology... Echelon has its own security compartments, secret spoke instead of confidential, umbra gamma instead of secret, and top secret umbra instead of top secret, a compartment that it trumps for level of secrecy and security classification. Echelon also long ago developed its own wide area network, much like the public internet today. Only this network is completely inaccessible to public traffic. I would guess, departing from the article, that it was not inaccessible to Mr. Snowden and his ilk, even though he had only worked for a few months for Booz Hamilton. Booz Hamilton, which has been around since the First World War and represents easily the sort of cooperation, more than cooperation, co-optation, fusing of capitalism and the United States government. But returning to the article, As the targets of Echelon eavesdropping have evolved from cable traffic and landline telecommunications to cell phone traffic and email, so have its tools. These include not only satellites, but also computers for filtering traffic to extract relevant data. Now, that phrase is what is significant. Filtering traffic to extract relevant data. If you think that you're safe because of numbers, well, supercomputers have rendered that thought obsolete. The reason being that not only is all of your information stored forever, whatever you put online, whatever is said about you online, whatever porn sites you like to pull up, how frequently you pull them up, which ones you prefer, they are sortable. And they can be sorted not just by keywords, but by sophisticated programs that have everything to do with the latest psychological insights. For example, you may hear that it has been estimated that for a million inputs, a single phone call being an example of an input, Echelon's dictionaries eliminate all but 6,500 as important. Of those, only 1,000 meet the criteria for forwarding them to analysts, who typically select only 10 for closer study. From those 10, only one warrants the closer study, the production of an intelligence report. So one in a million, right? But these statistics seem to suggest that though civil libertarians and others may be outraged over the existence of a system such as Echelon, NSA is really not interested in listening in on most people's phone conversations. It simply sifts through 99.9999% of the communication taking place in the world at any given time so as to winnow out that 0.001%, 0.01% that warrants its attention. Still, concerns about Echelon motivated Margaret Peg Newsham, a former computer systems analyst, to release the first reports about the system in 1988. During the 1990s, New Zealand journalist Nicky Hager painstakingly researched the system to produce his 1996 book, Secret Power. And in the late 90s, respected U.S. intelligence writer Jeff Richelson studied Echelon. The European Union also published a report on Echelon in 2001, in which it called on European citizens to encrypt their emails as a means of protecting them from snooping by the intelligence services of the English-speaking countries. That's at FAQs.org. Now I want to turn to Daniel Ellsberg, who, as you know, leaked the Pentagon Papers 40 years ago. He writes, also in The Guardian, quoting Daniel Ellsberg, "In my estimation, there has not been in American history a more important leak than Edward Snowden's release of NSA materials, and that definitely includes the Pentagon Papers 40 years ago. Snowden's whistleblowing gives us the possibility to roll back a key part of what has amounted to an executive coup against the U.S. Constitution. Since 9/11, there has been, at first secretly but increasingly openly, a revocation of the Bill of Rights for which this country fought over 200 years ago. In particular, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of the U.S. Constitution, which safeguard citizens from unwarranted intrusion by the government into their private lives, have been virtually suspended." I've got to interrupt with my own thoughts again. Forgive me, but people say if you don't have something to hide, listen to a cop, you got something to hide. Cops know everyone breaks the law. If you think you haven't broken the law, you don't know how many laws there are. And if you think that you haven't broken some laws, well, you also don't know your own self. But cops do. And cops get angry at you for any reason. And be assured, cops do get very angry at people who are disobedient. Obedient enough to be dissenters. Oh, yes. Dissenters piss cops off. There is a constant tension there. So, if you're not toeing the line, you need to know what's happening with the NSA. But returning to Daniel Ellsberg's article in The Guardian, the government claims it has a court warrant under FISA, but that unconstitutionally sweeping warrant is from a secret court shielded from effective oversight, almost totally deferential to executive requests. As Russell Tice, a former National Security Agency analyst, put it, it is a kangaroo court with a rubber stamp. For the president, then, to say that there is judicial oversight is nonsense, as is the alleged oversight function of the intelligence committees in Congress, not for the first time, as with issues of torture, kidnapping, detention, assassination by drones, and death squads. They have shown themselves to be so thoroughly co-opted by the agencies they supposedly monitor. I said so. He didn't say. He said thoroughly co-opted by the agencies they supposedly monitor. They are also black holes for information that the public needs to know. Daniel Ellsberg also writes the fact that congressional leaders were briefed on this and went along with it without any open debate, hearing staff analysis, or any real chance for effective dissent only shows how broken the system of checks and balances is in this country. And he writes, obviously, the United States is not now a police state. This is where I have to quibble with Mr. Ellsberg. What the hell do you call a police state? Okay, we got 7 million people out of 300-something million who are on probation, on parole, or in imprisonment. A world record. And if the world record holder isn't a police state, then what is? What does he mean? I call that denial. I call this secret police. Can we say secret police? Secret police, for God's sake. Someone needs to yell in the streets, secret police, for God's sake. Secret police. Returning to Daniel Ellsberg. Given the extent of this invasion of people's privacy, we do not have the full electronic and legislative infrastructure of such a state. If, for example, there was now a law that led one to a large scale, excuse me, if there was now a war that led to a large-scale anti-war movement, like the one we had against the war in Vietnam, or more likely if we suffered one more attack on the scale of 9/11, Daniel Ellsberg writes, I fear for our democracy. These powers are extremely dangerous. There are legitimate reasons for secrecy, and specifically for secrecy about communications intelligence. That's why, Daniel Ellsberg writes, Bradley Manning and I, both of whom had access to such intelligence with clearances higher than top secret, chose not to disclose any information with that classification. It is why Edward Snowden has committed himself to withhold publication of most of what he might have revealed. But it is not legitimate to use a secrecy system to hide programs that are blatantly unconstitutional in their breadth and potential abuse. Neither the president nor Congress as a whole may by themselves revoke the Fourth Amendment, and that's why Snowden has revealed so far was secret from the American people. In 1975, Senator Frank Church spoke of the National Security Agency in these terms, quote, I know that the capacity is there to make tyranny total in America, and we must see to it that this agency and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law and under proper supervision so that we never cross over that abyss. That is the abyss from which there is no return, end quote. Departing again from Daniel Ellsberg, that was from the Church hearings. Church hearings, that rare and long-distant historical review of what was actually happening with the three-letter terrorists that run Washington. And now we've, well, let me return to Daniel Ellsberg. He writes, the dangerous prospect of which he warned was that America's intelligence gathering capability, which is today beyond any comparison with what existed in his pre-digital era, at any time could be turned around on the American people and no American would have any privacy left. That has now happened. That is what Snowden has exposed with official secret documents. The NSA, FBI, and CIA have with the new digital technology surveillance powers over our own citizens that the Stasi, the secret police in the former Democratic Republic of East Germany, could scarcely have dreamed of. Snowden reveals that the so-called intelligence community has become the United Stasi of America. So we have fallen into Senator Church's abyss. There's more to that. You can find it at The Guardian. It is from Daniel Ellsberg. You are listening to KBOO. KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Other frequencies elsewhere. Hello, Corvallis. Glad to have you back. And didn't have time to get to an interesting article that I found on globalresearch.ca, which is by Washington's blog. Its title is, Are Emergency Plans Meant Only for Nuclear War the Real Justification for Spying? A very interesting article, which I recommend. And I also recommend that you stay tuned to KBOO Portland, because Linda is coming up next. Just saw her through the little round window in the studio here, which is marked private for some reason. 106. It's like it came out of a Navy ship or something, except that it's made of wood. I don't know. That's KBOO for you. Kind of interesting, kind of different. And you'll be glad you stayed tuned in. Once again, put Press Watch into the search bar. to find the audio archives for this show. And don't touch that dial and all the ships at sea.
At KBOO.FM, you can listen to programs you missed and other special web-only programs. On the homepage, under the tab Latest Audio, you'll find an interview with the Manhattan Transfer, a 1983 speech by Gloria Martin, one of the founders of Radical Women, an interview about the Merry Meet Gathering, and more. That's KBOO.FM, under Latest Audio. Thanks for listening.
Our listeners in Corvallis and Albany will be happy to hear that we have replaced the failed translator and installed a brand new translator. KBOO's new frequency for Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath is 104.3.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look this morning on KBOO. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the Guantanamo Bay Prison Camp. Will it ever close? My guest today is Andy Worthington. He's a journalist and author based in London. His most recent book is The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison. It's the definitive source on the men who've been locked up in Guantanamo. Thoroughly researched, you can read the real stories of these men and how they ended up in our prison camp. The American government has called these men the worst of the worst. In the book, you'll learn that they're far from that. Many